Hello, my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. My Desties, you're part of the Destination. I am Stuart Butler with Visit Myrtle Beach, joined as ever with plain old Adam Stoker. How are you, Adam?
Plain old Adam Stoker. Well, I tell you what, it's nice to have my given name back. I appreciate that. It's been an interesting journey away from it as you've given me additional names. And I appreciate the opportunity to just be me today.
You know, sometimes the show, you just need a reset, you know, refresh, rethink. And really, I'm doing this today out of respect. We have a very important guest with us today. I believe, I may be wrong, this may be the first PhD we've had on the show. Apologies if I get that wrong. But today we are joined with Dr. Mari Forbes. How are you?
I'm just fine. Thank you, Stuart.
Did I get the name right? I did, right?
You sure did. And I'm very much looking forward to having the conversation with both you and Adam.
Yeah, and likewise. And this is the first time we've met, so I'm really excited to explore this topic. It's one I'm not particularly knowledgeable about, so I'm looking forward to a doctorate level education today, and hopefully the audience is too. We're going to be talking about economic development. You are the guru in that space, and we'll get into your thesis about what you believe in that in a second. But before we jump into that, and I'm be remiss me not to say you're the CEO of the National Travel Center, right? So we appreciate you being on the show today. Before we jump into the topic, Adam, it's that time.
It's my time to shine, isn't it?
It is. It's Stu's News.
I mean, the volume's on this time. I don't know, Stu. We gotta finish it out.
Yeah.
There we
Mari,
go.
I don't know if you've heard this jingle before. I get it if you hate it, because I do as well. Adam insists on keep playing it. He keeps pretending other people like it, but we're stuck with it for now.
He tries to stir things up. So.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, you've clearly been listening to the show, Mari.
So today, I've got to sort of come hat in hand a little bit to the Destination. You know, I think we talk a lot about the importance of building a community and you know, being communicative and present with that community. That's something we preach from a destination marketing perspective. And I went down a little rabbit hole a couple of weeks ago. Someone had reached out to me on LinkedIn and said, "Hey, did you see the review I left on Spotify?" And I'm like, I didn't know you could actually leave written reviews and you could rate on Spotify. I use Apple Podcasts, so I hadn't really spent a lot of time in it. But what I found is you can actually, in the Spotify platform, you can comment on an individual episode. And Lordy, the Destination has been showing up and leaving us comments, and we've just been letting it sit out there in the ether, and we haven't been responded. So shame on us. So we're going to spend a couple of minutes today on Stu's News, one, reprimanding ourselves, but two, shining a light on these Desties that have clearly connected with the show and are now part of the Destination. So, Adam, I'm going to let you read a couple of these, if you don't mind.
Yeah, and before I read these, I just want to let you know, this was probably my number one concern in letting you be kind of the person who sets up the accounts and the administrator on all the platforms, because I was a little worried that things might fall through the cracks. And sure enough, here we are finding that the Destination has been active and engaged. And I'm excited for us collectively to do a better job of engaging with our audience.
Yeah. Well, I will sit down and take my talking to appropriately, Adam. And so let's
couldn't
jump
help
in.
It. Couldn't help it. Okay, so I'm going to read a few of these that have come through. On episode number two, which I believe that the title is Branded Entertainment, the Future of Destination Marketing. And someone who has a real creative name here called None Your Business says, "I don't want to see ads unless they are hilarious, funny, or entertaining. I'm so sick of boring, repetitive ads over and over. I also despise ads that make people look stupid and incompetent." So,
wow, that person has an opinion. I don't know who None Your Business is, but I would love to get them on the show and have them sort of draw some of this out. I also love that they distinguish between hilarious and funny. All right. So you don't have to be hilarious. You just have to be a little bit funny. So there's scales, right? So there's like Adam, and then there's like funny, and then there's hilarious, and then there's me,
There it is.
right? That's the scale. So that's good.
There it is. Yeah, I like that one. This one is Nate Grisak from, and sorry, Nate, if I butchered your last name there, but episode 11 was Will Doge Destroy the DMO? And Nate, I know Nate's been a listener for a long time because he's posted a few times about different episodes that we've done. He's commented on a few of the episodes, and he's been a great member. He's one of our Desties, one of the key Desties. And he says, great episode, guys. I really think that if we try to look optimistically at Doge and see how there can be an opportunity to tell our story better and also make our organization more efficient, there's a lot of opportunity there. And that's a great addition to that episode.
Great insight, right? Great insight. Excellent.
Yeah.
Thanks, Nate.
And Nate actually left another comment on episode 16
He's a
where
super testy.
he's a super Destie. That's a, you know what? I like that. Maybe that's an official mantle
We
for
may need
Nate.
merch, man. Like, let's set up a merch store at Esto and like have super dusty shirts and hats. And
Ooh.
people, I don't know if people would
See,
want them, but we should totally do
leave it to you to try to monetize immediately. You know, the moment we get a couple people
it.
interested, you want to sell hats and
Yeah, I'm the
t-shirts
one
and
interested in the commercial side, the CMO of a destination that's sharing this stuff for free without an incentive to get
Yeah.
business. That's
I mean, here
right.
I
That's
am just
100%
doing it out of
right.
the goodness of my heart,
Yeah.
Stuart.
You're such an altruistic guy, for sure.
So Nate on this episode 16 says, "Okay, I think that Stu's News jingle needs to stay. Wait for it and play it twice." Nate wants to hear it twice. He doesn't think it's long enough.
Well,
And
thankfully for Nate, like that was the case for the first like 29 episodes, is you were accidentally playing it twice. So, but
and
now let's
based on
stick to
Nate's
once.
support, you know.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it was all about Nate.
So the episode that we did with Matt Steiker and Kwaku from Madden, the episode title is Code Switching. It was about code switching. It doesn't show the full title here. I don't have it in front of me. But somebody said it's C Soul. Oh, it's Caleb Sullivan. Oh, look at that. My detective skills just jumped out there. He says, I thoroughly enjoy the show. As a professional in the destination marketing space, this show gives great insights that we all need to consider for the future of our industry. Thank you for the great work y'all are doing. And here's the best part. I tried to dissect his username, and then at the very bottom of his comment, he types out his full name, Caleb Sullivan. So I don't think I'm near the quality of detective that I thought I was
I mean,
there.
that encryption of C. Sullivan is, I mean, that's a hard one. That's up there with the Enigma machine. It's pretty hard to crack, but you did it. Congrats.
I nailed it. Caleb's awesome. I've talked to Caleb several times at
Yeah,
different
Caleb's with
conferences and stuff.
Carbatize, former DMO guy, moved to the dark side. He's a great dude
Yeah.
for sure. Yeah.
Great guy. And
That's awesome.
understands the value of building relationships just because. I got to say, Caleb, he doesn't try to monetize relationships too early. He just makes
Yeah,
friends and he's
he
really good at
does,
it.
and understands your pain points and what you need, and then tries to help, right? He's helping, not selling. No, good
Yeah.
dude. If you're interested in something like Carbatize, Caleb's a good guy to connect with for sure.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Okay, episode 26, Dustin Rowe. The concept of destination information being a commodity is interesting to me. Now, you have so many sources talking about where to go and what to do, influencers, bloggers, LLMs. How do you see them as advocates rather than competitors? That's an interesting insight. I'd be curious to hear both Mari and Stuart's thoughts on
All right,
that.
so read it again so we're set up for the audience.
Okay. So the concept of destination information being a commodity is interesting to me. Now you have so many sources talking about where to go and what to do, influencers, bloggers, LLMs. How do you see them as advocates rather than competitors? Or in other words, how are we supposed to not feel like they're all competing for the market share of information?
So Mari, just to set that up, what that episode was talking about, one of the things it talked about was the fact that with AI now and how consumers are beginning to use tools like ChatGPT to perform their research on where to travel, what to do in a destination, that these LLMs are an aggregate of a lot of information that's out there, right? The general commoditization of content has already begun. And so an AI system like ChatGPT is going to pull content from an Expedia and a TripAdvisor and a Google and a Visit Myrtle Beach and sort of formulate that down to the lowest common denominator, the generic content. And so it poses questions like, what's the relevance of a destination marketing organization's website? So that's what he's sort of probing at, is that competition, and are these other folks that are providing the content to the LLMs also competition? So my personal feeling on that is, I don't see that as competition unless there's misinformation, unless there's information that is harmful to your destination. I think it's the more the merrier. I think the more we stop trying to own every piece of the consumer journey and realize at the end of the day, as long as the person chooses our destination, has a great time, has good positive word of mouth, spends a ton of money, and has a positive impact on our economy and our quality of life, then it doesn't really matter what our role was, as long as we can prove value and that we contributed, right? So I don't see it as competition. I do think it's an opportunity for destinations to differentiate ourselves through niche content, through contextual content, through opinionated content, through stuff that they cannot get other places. But I don't personally see it as content. Mari, I don't know if you if this is a subject that
I don't.
you want to try to tackle.
Yeah, I was a DMO for 3 years, so and
Okay.
well, I don't think it's competition either because the DMO is the only organization that can give the most inspiring message about the destination. So contact all those people, put out very, very clear and inspiring communications to everybody that you can find that might be in the marketplace talking about your destination, and make sure that giving everybody the right message, and pretty soon, and on the website too, makes pretty soon it's going to permeate the chat
Yeah.
GPT
Yeah.
environment. And so I think the DMOs have an opportunity to talk about their destination in the unique way that only they can.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more.
I just want to add to that that it's really a mindset question if you're asking should we view them as competitors or advocates? And it comes back to what's your ultimate goal? So if your ultimate goal is to generate visitation at all costs to support your community and make sure that you continue to bring value to the community and make the lives of the residents better, they're advocates. These are yes and outlets, right? However, if your ultimate goal is to get credit for every dollar that comes into the community, then yes, these are competitors because they will absolutely take some of the share of credit for the travel that comes in. So I think if any of us are looking at this as, well, I want credit for every visitor, I think you're going to end up seeing these as competitors. But I would encourage, and it's the same thing that Stuart and Mari just said, look at these as advocates. These are team members of yours who are promoting the destination, who are going to generate that ultimate goal, which is more visitation and better quality of life for your residents.
Yeah, and I would actually embrace them. I'd encourage you to reach out to folks that are publishing content about you and educate them on the positivity and the offerings that you have and what differentiates you, and use them as an influencer. Like you said, they are advocates. And I think, we talked ad nauseum on the show about how we're not just a marketing agency, right? DMO has to provide value to the community beyond just promotion and ROI on marketing spend. And so we got to get away from this where we need to feel that we have to validate our existence through ROI and directly tangible tracking of a marketing expense to a visitation. Certainly, that's table stakes. We have to do that thing, but it's not the only thing by a long shot. We need to provide a lot more value deep into the value chain of the traveler, but also more importantly into the community. So that's great. Was that all of them, Adam? Was that all the
That's all of
comments?
them. There's a review that we actually read on the show last week, so I think
Yeah.
that caught us up.
Awesome. And so we'll do a better job monitoring that. And Adam's going to take over that responsibility because obviously I slack at that. But we appreciate it.
No.
We
I
had
don't
no,
want the
that's what I heard.
responsibility. I just
I
want the
heard you say I
ability to
couldn't do it.
judge.
No, okay, that's fair. Maybe it's a joint shared responsibility.
Yeah, let's do
But
it.
what I will say is now we have at least four listeners, right? We have your mom, we have Caleb, Dustin, and None Your Business. So it's growing, man. We've quadrupled since the first episode where it's just your mom. So
Yeah.
that's
I'm
great.
worried that None Your Business may just be my mom under a pseudonym, but we'll see.
Yeah, maybe so. So at least three, minimum of three. Max, yeah, minimum of three. All right, Mari, we apologize for our self-indulgent little ramble there, but we appreciate you being on the show. So this is a topic we haven't talked about before, and we're trying to get diversification of the topics. And economic development is something that a lot of DMOs think about. A lot of them dabble in. Very few that I talk to really have a strong point of view on what their role is. Very few CMOs think about themselves as being in economic development, and I know you have a very different opinion on that. So let's start off by saying, what is your thesis here? Like, what is the statement that you want to share with the world about DMOs and economic development?
Tourism is economic development. It brings revenues and tax revenues into a community, and they can be distributed. However, I think tourism organizations have been really amiss about not considering themselves part of the economic delivery system. And on the other hand, economic developers have chased corporate relocations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, for decades, and never quite believed that the small businesses that serve the visitors could really do the job of being an important part of the economy. So I think we've had a communication problem. I think that had tourism offices brought a stronger message that they are part of economic development, they would have had way less problems worrying about if somebody was going to take away their revenue stream that doesn't understand what they do contribute. So, tourism is foundational economic development. It's not the economy, except maybe somewhere Stuart like Myrtle Beach,
Yeah, Myrtle
where
Beach, you could argue.
the
Yeah.
economy, but
Yeah.
not a lot of other places. It is the mainstay of the economy. It's a part of the economy, but it's one that is foundational. It sustains those businesses aren't going anywhere. They aren't going to get up and suddenly corporately move to somewhere else and, devastate the community. So it's important that tourism bring the message that they are a part of economic development in order to strengthen their own positions, which they
Yeah.
haven't done really well. And there's some progress, Adam. I noticed in the last survey that you put out, 53% of the respondents said that they were judging their success by the amount of economic development they delivered. That's progress. So we're in the process of writing the second book, actually focused on economic development professionals to help them understand how tourism can be an important part of their portfolio and be foundational, be sustaining revenue that they don't really have to worry about, but then they have to figure out how they support the small businesses and the communities that the visitors patronize. That hasn't been something they've done either. So I think we're at the point of having to bridge some major communication gaps.
Now, in your experience, I mean, you've probably seen a lot of different DMOs and different structures, and you know, we've talked a lot on the show about how every DMO is slightly different in terms of their structure, who they respond to, how they're funded, like what their mandate is. And I've seen, you know, a variety of different approaches in different communities. You know, we just got a new CEO, Matt Pavonic, who came from Topeka. In their structure is they have a umbrella organization called, I think it's the Greater Topeka Partnership, and they have under that umbrella they have economic development, they have a chamber of commerce, they have the CVB, they have a downtown organization, placemaking organization, but they all sort of ladder up to a single strategy, a single CEO, single focal point. Whereas a place like Myrtle Beach is different, right? We have a chamber and a CVB that are one entity, but then we have an economic development organization for the region. that is separate, but we collaborate. And then we have another economic development that's for the whole region. This, again, separate, and we collaborate. And then our individual municipalities have their own stuff focused on economic development. And you know, there's just probably two of the spectrums. But what is the structure you commonly see, or is there in your mind an ideal structure or way that should be
Well,
set up?
they're two very different things, actually.
Yeah.
And I taught destination marketing and management at the master's level at Temple University for 8 years. So did an incredible amount of research on various models, et cetera, so that the students that came into the program at the beginning of the summer went out at the other end ready to go to work for a DMO. There are structures all over the place. But about the third chapter into our book, we are advocating for exactly the model that your CEO came from because you get more bang for the buck. And everybody in that integrated model then can be focused on improving the quality of life in the community, which, if you're not focused on that, why on earth would you have want to have all those visitors running around? Yeah, the cooperative model, and we've got some good examples that we have retrieved and talked to and are looking at asking them, now, why did your community come to the point where it decided to combine all those? Part of it was COVID. Tourism offices were going out of business, and economic development organizations never lose their funding. And so also the chamber, when no one was coming to visit the town and patronize the small businesses because nobody could go out, was also struggling. So the whole point of the Main Street organizations is to enhance that downtown community. They don't put a lot of emphasis on tourism, which I think they're amiss in that, but at least they're trying to strengthen the economy of the downtown locations. So they're really all of the organizations essentially are pointed in the same direction. And if they pull themselves together, there are two or three partnerships that are able to, under that umbrella that you described, have five or six people who are able to generate all of the activity that you need to do in each one of those various what were once silos. So you can take funding and leverage it much more efficiently than if you have something over here and a staff and administrative expenses and another organization and your own staff and administrative expenses, et cetera. Combining all that together gives you a lot more funding to do something productive with.
That's great. In your mind, you know, if you had to sort of argue the fors and against that structure that you've identified as the optimal structure, what do you see as the biggest resistant points when you've gone to a destination and they don't want to go in that direction or aren't in that direction? What are the biggest sort of arguments against it? But then what are ultimately the arguments that prevail and result in that kind of an outcome?
It's change.
Yeah.
They've been in their own little silos for all those years, and they have community leaders. Somebody's led the chamber for the last 31 years, and somebody became the Main Street director, and they have that proviso, which doesn't quite, they think, quite align with all of it. Their economic development director might be new. They don't look at the combined model is something that they've learned how to do or had any experience with. So you really have people who don't understand one another to start with and haven't had communication. And people don't like the change. They don't like to give up their power bases. So you had a
What
certain
ultimately overcomes that? Like it, when you've seen folks finally bite the bullet and go in that direction, what is the argument or what is the benefit that they see that finally lets people give up the power and be willing to accept change?
I'm not sure they see the benefit. It's adversity that happens.
Okay.
And they're all trying to stay alive and stay in business. And finally, somebody says, okay, perhaps we could all work together and leverage what we have. Or somebody like your new CEO comes in who has experience under that partnership umbrella model and is able to produce and the results that have happened because we were combined, we could do X that we couldn't do in the past. You know, because we're combined, we could leverage, you know, this funding or that program or whatever in order to then deliver a higher level of services. And so there's a couple of ways that, as I said, there's a lot more combined organizations after COVID than there was before that. And it was kind of amazing to watch the transition that's happened over the last 5 years. We keep a database of, oh, I don't know, probably 10,000 different destinations and chambers and main streets and so on and so forth. And it's been really interesting to watch the change.
Well,
Neat.
I want to just add here. I agree with your thesis, Mari. I think I've seen it different in different destinations, and I actually believe that the larger an organization, the more challenging it is to get everyone on the same page as far as tourism and economic development. I'm going to tell a brief story just to kind of illustrate this, that when I first started at this organization, I had been hired from another agency, and me and my business partner, Colby, really worked together to grow the business. And so I was the account manager. We shared strategy responsibility, and then he was the creative person that brought it to life. And so we're talking every campaign for like 3 years that came out of our organization, the two of us built together. And then as we started hiring people and growing and bringing in more business, it felt like the incentives weren't as aligned as we got bigger as they were when it was just the two of us figuring it out together. And I think when you look at an economic development organization and a tourism organization, when they're trying to work together, in some of these small rural communities, I've seen them work hand. Sometimes it's the same person if the destination is small enough, right? But I've seen these small rural communities work really, really well together to make sure they all talk about it starts with a visit because they know the value of getting someone to move to the destination. And now they've got a better labor base and now they've got a better tax base and so on and so forth. I think once you start to scale and now political interests come in and differing economic interests come in, suddenly you start to see those lines get a little bit more blurred. And my question would be how at the scale, and I think Myrtle Beach is probably a great example of a larger destination that has a large economic development organization and also a large tourism organization. And there's political interests and there's advocacy interests and there's all these different components. How do you get everybody on the same page when the incentives aren't near as aligned as they are when it's a really small rural community?
I'm gonna let Stuart speak to that first because there gets to be a lot more cats to herd.
It's I don't know if I'm really positioned to answer it effectively because, candidly, it's and I'm almost ashamed to admit this. It's not an area that I've spent a lot of time. I've been in this role for 4 years, and the number of conversations I've had directly about, the quote unquote economic development side of what we do beyond driving tourism is very limited. I've barely had direct engagement with a regional economic group. Now, others within my organization certainly have, and we align on advocacy objectives and things like that. But it's something that I've been really thinking about a lot recently. And I'll tell you specifically why, because, our economic development organization is great. They do a phenomenal job, but their focus, almost single focus, is on industrial economic development, trying to diversify our economy, trying to get technology, high-end manufacturing, things like that into our
So
organization,
let me
into
stop
our
you real quick
community.
in
That's the
that.
traditional approach, Stuart, to economic development, which they're even learning that they need to change. 14,000 economic developers chase between 5 and 700 corporate or industrial moves a year. That's worse odds than at your casino.
Well, I wanted to add to what you're saying, Stuart, just real quick, and I know you're trying to get to your point there, but with economic development focusing on industrial and you're focused on visitation, now we've got competing interests
Yeah,
that will make it very
alignment is
difficult to
not
work
there, right?
together, right?
But I also think, so where the gap is, and what's gotten me thinking more about this, especially as I've gotten to know Matt Pavonic a little bit and looked at their structure in Topeka, we have a need in Myrtle Beach. We've evolved as a destination. Our product has improved tremendously over the last couple of decades, and we're at a point where we have a handful of 4-star hotels. We need more. Like, they're the ones that fill up first. We don't have a 5-star hotel. And when we've got celebrities coming into town, like we often do for either content projects we're working on or events like the Myrtle Beach Classic, where we had people like Kevin Costner and Kurt Russell here a couple of weeks ago, I need a higher end product, right? And that's a demand that's growing. It's not shrinking. But right now in our community, there's not a single entity or a coalition of entities that are proactively identifying those gaps and formulating a strategy and a game plan to go and acquire those and solicit those, right? So it's something that probably falls on us as a DMO, but also economic development and also the municipalities and also the placemaking organizations. So there are aligned objectives that we need to identify as a community and work collaboratively to achieve that just haven't been a part of the game plan for since I've been involved and certainly prior to that.
Well,
So
Stuart, perhaps the people who are doing industrial economic development, et cetera, and others don't realize how much destination has changed.
That's certainly true, and
20
that's on
years
us,
ago,
right? We haven't
20
done
years
the
ago,
education.
there wasn't those high-end hotels there, and it was a
Right.
completely different perspective of how
Correct.
you looked at Myrtle Beach as a destination and the kind of people that went there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now you are entirely a different place. And so it may be that you might have to educate those, your community leaders about the difference in economic echelon
Yeah.
your new visitors are coming from, as opposed to the ones that used to come there 20 years ago who didn't want to spend any money. If you're staying at a 5-star hotel, well, 4-star hotel, if you're staying at one of those, you've got plenty of discretionary income. They may not realize your clients have changed that much.
They absolutely don't. And that's on us, right? That's that we've got to hold our hands up and say that that's a problem we need to try to solve. I think one of our roles as a DMO and a chamber is to, because we're both entities, is to be a convener in the community, you know? And so we have a finite number of resources, a finite amount of time, finite number of employees, and so we sort of select what our focus is. And as I've said multiple times on the show, our focus determines our reality. And this hasn't been a focal point for us up until now, so we haven't created the mechanism to convene those structures, those power structures that need to understand and be educated. And that's on us. Like, we have to do a better job. I think with Matt's leadership and with a new sort of perspective internally, I think that's something we're going to certainly be working towards over the upcoming months. But I'm sure we're not alone, right? We're identifying a broader challenge within the destination community that if there's not a champion within your organization that's having these thoughts or prioritizing these things, then it falls through the gaps, which was your exact thesis at the beginning. So,
Oh, so many communities still stereotype what their visitors are. And I don't know what the figure is, 60%, 70% of all visitors are now in the higher income levels, 100 plus. And a lot of people still view visitors, and we don't call them that anymore, as tourists. Who want to spend as little money as possible, who, left behind a mess, et cetera, et cetera. Those 4-star hotels did some kind of research that pointed them to the opportunity there was to build there. And they must have recognized also, and then they're helping elevate the destination. But there's so much visitor stereotyping going on. For example, baby boomers are still the most affluent visitors in the United States. They don't care about budgets. They often don't even set one. And they spend a lot of money per trip because it's what they can do now. And they're not, there's no longer least expensive. We're going to take this tour bus for the least possible cost. That whole generation has moved off the radar. So somehow or the other, we need to get the message out to the tourism
Yeah.
community. These are not your father's visitors.
Yeah, for sure. And we see even the apples to apples comparison of household income isn't relevant anymore because we see younger generations value
Yep.
experiences more than things. And so
They're
even
not
if their
buying
household
homes.
income is lower, they'd rather splurge a little bit on certain luxuries like upgrading a hotel room. You know, they'd rather stay at a nice hotel and spend a little bit more money relative to their income. So I think the paradigm has shifted fundamentally, and if we're not having that conversation throughout our community, then we're doing our community a disservice. And so it's certainly something, a problem we've identified and are trying to solve. But I know we're not alone. I know a lot of destinations out there are still in their silos, are still thinking about their specific myopic mandate, and not thinking about this in a holistic economic development level. So we appreciate you bringing this conversation.
One of the things that I think that people have failed to look at is people who travel who have higher incomes have nice homes, and they want to stay in an accommodations property that's better than what their house is. And so where we've gotten to better residences with the people who actually now travel, those 4-star hotels and even a 5 are going to be in demand.
And I, you know, it's and it's beyond the accommodation. I think, you know, we've sort of focused on that, but there's also the other amenities, what we consider the gravity that might attract someone. Like in Myrtle Beach, we know that the beach is the number one driver of interest, but we also know that dining, shopping, live music, and attractions are right behind that, right? And in every destination you look at, it's the same thing. There's usually an anchor thing that attracts people, and then dining, shopping, live music, attractions are sort of right there behind it. And so are we doing what we can as an organization to improve that and elevate the product? Because as marketers, we all know that our job is to amplify the product we have, shine a light on the product. And the better the product, the more attractive that is, the easier our job is to get someone to consider and ultimately come and visit our destination. So it's certainly within our mandate and without any interest. I mean, even if we go back to first principles of marketing and we think about the four P's, right? One of those P's is product. In although we don't control the product as a DMO, we certainly can influence the product that's coming in, and we should because it helps us achieve our strategic goals. And not only that, it helps improve the quality of life of the resident, which is ultimately our top level goal. You know, if we have better amenities for the residents to enjoy, that's a win, especially if it's also attracting more visitation.
Figure out how to crack that nut, because DMOs have assumed that product development is somebody else's problem, that the private sector should do that, the developer should come in and do that, somebody else comes in to do that, and that government funding, et cetera, should not be spent developing products at the destination. There's changes happening with that. We've just finished a product for Nevada, and they have a destination development department as a part of Travel Nevada now, which is making a huge difference in the areas that they're working in. But traditionally, the DMOs have assumed, well, okay, communicating with the customers and developing the product isn't something we do. It belongs to other people's responsibility. And that can no longer be the case. That's one of the premises of destination management as opposed to just destination marketing.
Well, this is where I get sometimes really frustrated with just the financial structure and incentive surrounding the destination marketing industry because, you know, you show me the incentives, I'll show you the outcome. But the question I have is if it truly all starts with a visit, and if our goal is economic development, whether that be in the form of additional visitation to support our existing businesses, or even bringing a larger worker base, or even bringing additional businesses into the community. And destinations are bringing in Myrtle Beach's case, millions of people into the destination on an annual basis. Why are we not putting budget together from both economic development and the tourism destination and having an active marketing campaign to encourage these visitors of why they should want to live here, why they should want to work here, why they should want to purchase a home here, and take this economy that we've already created and truly align our actions with that economy to our ultimate goals. And if we do that, I actually feel like we're going to get some pretty incredible results on what it's going to do for a place economy.
That's what
So,
exactly what the combined partnership model is designed to do, is understanding. It first does all start with nobody will bring a business without first visiting to see what life is like. So that's foundational. And if the town is ugly, everything shows up on Instagram these days, and friends are going to say, "Why in the world are you moving there? That's ugly." It all starts with a visit, but not everybody has embraced that idea. And that's why we've done the research we have. So we have the facts now to prove exactly how that entire scenario worked so that we can start to get the message out. But when everybody understands that, then you have a basis for putting together a budget that, in fact, looks at tourism as foundational economic development and understands how tourism and placemaking and what the town looks like and what's available. That's it. First thing you have to have is housing, and a lot of places don't have any housing available. You know, there are other things like that, but that combined organization is able to then look at everything from a holistic perspective.
yeah, and I'll paint the alternative picture a little bit, because I think, you both paint a really beautiful utopian picture of what it should be like, right? The reality on the ground for a lot of destinations is, and we already identified, a lot of these folks are separated, right? They're separate organizations with separate incentive structures, and so it's sort of a win-lose scenario right now. Like, in principle, should some dollars be spent promotion and some on product development? For sure. I don't think there's anyone that would argue that's not the case. But where is that line drawn, right? Because it's not 100% promotion and 0% product development, and it's not 100% product development, 0%. So who's making the argument, and what their incentives are going to have different perspectives on that. Is it 50-50? Is it 80-20? Either way. And so I think the fact that everyone's separated, it's if I win, someone loses, or if they win, I lose in the current structure, right? So I think that's one of the disincentives. I think the other is the regulations, the revenue structure, and the
Right.
restrictions that are imposed on those right now. Prevent or prohibit, in a lot of cases, money being spent in other areas. And there's a fight to maintain that restriction, because the fear is, if you sort of loosen that up, then that money goes into a general fund somewhere and really doesn't provide a measurable, tangible benefit to the quality of life of the community as it was originally intended. And then, if you start to spend money sort of willy-nilly all over the place, and there's not a deliberate centralized strategy around that, then you run into situations like we're seeing in Florida, right? Where there's people that there are fundamentally people that disagree that any taxpayers' dollars should be spent on promotion or economic development, right? They think that's not the purpose. And so those folks are going to come out really quickly and defund a lot of folks. So again, it comes down to what it often does in our industry: fear, right? Fear of losing our power, our money, our ability to influence. And, as a DMO who focuses our budget on promotion, we know definitively what our ROI is, right? We can measure the economic impact we have. And for someone to come out and say, "Well, we want X percent of that dollars to put over here," then as a steward of that community's money — it's not my money, it's the community's — I have to be a stalwart defender of that and say, well, unless you can demonstrate an ROI that's equal or greater to what is already being invested in, then I have no interest in entertaining that concept. So
Can I
there
challenge
are
you
a
on
lot
that?
of structures in place that prevent the kind of utopia that you guys are describing.
I
Yeah,
want to
sure.
challenge what you said there, because you said you definitively understand the economic impact of your activities. But if we're not tracking from the visit through to the increased worker base, to the increased number of businesses that come to town, and like the full long tail economic impact, we don't have the whole picture, right? So while you do understand the economic impact as it pertains to visitation, you don't understand the true long tail economic impact
100%,
for
right?
the
So,
destination.
but you strengthen my position because now I can make the argument, well, I understand the minimum economic impact I'm having, right? It's actually greater than I'm measuring right now. So again, the argument comes down to, can you demonstrate that adding this product to the destination over the long haul is going to outperform what is the activity that we know is measurably performing well?
And my response would be there's only one way to find out.
Yeah, but that's a risk, right? And we're not risk
Well,
takers.
the other way to find out is every improvement you make in a community from an amenity standpoint also benefits residents.
Yeah,
And
for
so
sure.
we are of a mind that you get them install, get them involved and get their opinions of the kinds of things that they want. That whole situation in Florida has been so focused on just promoting overseas visitors and on and on and on and on and on. Those communities that are trying to take those revenues to lower property taxes have never been inculcated with the message that this stuff is core economic development in your state. Florida is the number one, tourism is the number one employer in your state. Obviously, that message hadn't got to any of those places.
I could not agree more. I mean, this is such a fascinating conversation. I think I would love to continue it for several more hours, but we're running a little bit short of time. Are there any sort of avenues that we haven't poked into today, Mari, that you would like to articulate to the audience, or even if it's like a plea to the world to do better tomorrow than they do today?
I think half of the problem is communication, is getting the message out there and keeping on putting the message out and putting on the message. But in order to do that, you have to put everything within the perspective of economic, the results of money. That is the only thing that community leaders listen to most of the time, is because that's what they're focused on. But it's not. It's not impossible to do that and quantify a number of these things, but you've just got to keep taking the position that this is important for our community. The other thing is get everybody focused on improving the quality of life in the community. I don't understand why all of these people working somehow to do that can't communicate with one another and work under a common purpose.
Do you think that some of that is that, at least of what I've observed, is oftentimes, and there's certainly exceptions, but it's usually like the CEO of the DMO has a relationship with the CEO of the Economic Development Organization, but that's sort of the only point of contact. Maybe it goes one level deep, right? Another senior team member, but you don't get the people that are doing the deep work and developing sort of the tactical execution that are really convening and collaborating. Like, that doesn't seem to be a structure that exists. And are we missing opportunities there because we're duplicating efforts, or we're sort of pulling at two sides of the same
We don't
solution?
have those traditions in America. We just don't. Somehow or the
Well,
other, they didn't get inculcated in our organizations.
in a lot of cases, personal interests are trumping community interests, right? So what's going to help you accelerate your career personally sometimes doesn't line up exactly with what's going to help the community.
Yeah, I don't know if I totally buy that. I mean, I think there's certainly individual, but I would say, generally speaking, I think I wouldn't necessarily assign that to motive. I think it's more of there's a
Oh,
lot to do, right? I don't know that people are
I don't necessarily
specifically
think
trying to get
it's
a foot up on the ladder. I think they just have a lot, and I think there's a finite amount of resources that everyone has. So is this something we choose to focus on versus the louder thing over here that is getting our attention?
I think we're so commercially oriented and achievement or oriented in America that that's just sort of you got to keep rising up the ladder, and you've got to, in order to do that, you have to bypass somebody else. That is just so fundamental to the society that I think it permeates everything.
Well, and I don't even think it's intentional that you're trying to keep someone else down or you're trying to sacrifice the community for your own gain. In a lot of cases, it's just incentive structure that's if you have to choose between one or the other, Stuart, I know you well enough to know that in a lot of cases you would choose the community over your own personal gain. I don't think everybody, when faced with that dilemma, has the ability to make that same decision.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you saying that. I definitely think there are folks out there like that for sure. You know, the other thing I
Definitely.
would say is, you know, our reality is personal, right? The perspective we have is individual and it's based on our incentive structure, but it's also based on our influences. And so, you know, when we go back to that conversation about should we be investing in promotion or product, you know, at my core, I'm a marketer, right? And I believe that the marketing we do is impactful and positively impactful, and there's a positive ROI. But I also believe that we have not hit a saturation point. We're not at a point of diminishing returns. I don't think there's a DMO in the world that couldn't be more effective with more money, right? And so, at a positive ROI. And so, for me to sit down and consider even the possibility of saying, take some of this money that I know is working and put it over here. Is a really hard pill to swallow. I would prefer to sit down with folks and say, hey, if we have a need and we believe product development is important, rather than taking money from Peter to pay Paul, let's collaborate to find new ways to generate revenue to accomplish those product development goals. It's not an
100%
either/or,
agree
it's a
with
yes
you.
and kind of
Yeah,
approach.
absolutely agree. There's funding out there if you want to pursue, if people want to pursue it. It doesn't have to be a win-lose. It can be a win-win with some different approach to, okay, how do we get this funded without diminishing what we're already doing? Because one assumes what you're already doing is effective and shouldn't be changed.
100%. And Mona Beach is a testament to that. We're back at when Brad Dean was here, who's been on the show before. You know, Mona Beach was our funding mechanism was significantly lower. You know, we went pretty much overnight from a $4 million a year organization to a $50 million a year organization, and that was primarily driven by forward-thinking folks like our hotel industry and Brad to say, how can we find new money? And there was two sources they did. They created a TDF, but they also went to the state and created a matching grant program and said, hey, if we can generate X private dollars, will you match that to a degree? And so we have a 2-to-1 matching program. Every $1 we generate in private dollars, the state matches 50 cents of that. So there's a lot of creativity that I would love to see from the DMO world. Rather than saying, let me take someone else's money and use it for my needs, let's collaborate, let's work together and find ways to elevate everyone and bring more revenue to the table so we can invest it wisely and improve the quality of life for our residents. That's
Yeah.
my philosophy.
I like it.
Well, Mari, we are right out of time. We really appreciate you coming in and educating us on this. It's certainly not something we've talked about on the show before. So hopefully our audience appreciated the conversation. If they want to reach out to you, learn more about your organization and the data that you guys have and how you can help them, what's the best way to reach out to you?
Either phone or email. 717-617-2051 or Mari, Mari dot Forbes, Forbes, at nationaltravelcenter.org.
We really appreciate it, Mari.
And
Adam,
I've
if you.
really appreciated the conversation. You two are actually pretty bright about this subject as well. This has been a great conversation.
Well, we certainly don't have PhDs, but we've learned a lot
Yeah,
from you today.
exactly.
So thank you,
Thanks,
Mari.
Mari.
Adam, if they want to reach out to you, what's the best way?
Yeah, find me on LinkedIn or on Tourism IQ.
Thank you. And if you want to reach out to me, I'm going to remember to give out my contact information. Last episode, Adam distracted me so much by calling me a Manchester City fan that I forgot. But you can reach out to me, stuart.butler@visitmortalbeach.com, or hit me up on LinkedIn. And until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Thanks,
Thank you.
everybody. Did you see my repost on your LinkedIn post about John David's episode?
No.
I think you better go check it out. I don't know
Oh,
that you'll be
shit.
thrilled with it, but I think you ought to go check it out.
Oh, man.